16, smart cap and flowing hair, arms latched onto a sleek mare, hands following the bit, body radiating, cheeks flushed. Her face, the face of someone lost in a dream. "Daddy, watch me. Watch me win." "Eric," Kirsten shouted, waving across the room. "The tequila yearns for you." The only remaining outlier, Eric had yet to join the revels, sitting in the far corner, nursing a beer, rubbing his face, eyes bloodshot, brow graven. "Katie," he'd said to her just 3 weeks ago when she'd first let him back into the house, though not into her bed. "If Devin gets this..." But he never could finish the thought. One of a thousand half-conversations, neither of them able to finish one.
"Eric, it's your turn,"
Becca Plonsky demanded, lifting the shot glass, wiggling in her seat. Eric walked over, took a swig from the tequila, grinned boyishly, faking it, faking it, faking it. That sun-burnished face, and how he could make his eyes dance. Who could do that, make their eyes dance? Eric could. A few more swigs and he began talking freely, buoyantly, about Coach T's near laryngitis. About how Bobby V accidentally ordered the team's towels from a massage parlor supplier. About anything at all. Everything he said made everyone laugh and slap knees. Becca Plonsky even reached out to touch his arm as if to say, "Oh, stop, Eric, but don't ever stop." Slipping off into the hallway, Katie spotted Lacey, that sex doll face of hers, peeking through the rails of the staircase, watching them all, the manic chatter and gamesmanship, the way adults, parents, could talk forever and forever, and without ceasing, about nothing they cared about just to stop the worries churning through their hot brains. The next day, Lacey would fall during one of her qualifier routines, her heels catching one of the uneven bars, and her body folding in upon itself. Everyone would watch her crumpled on the floor, face blue, Coach T crying out. One fractured vertebra, another dislocated, and this would be the last time she'd ever compete. But none of them knew that now, except maybe Lacey.
"Katie,"
Molly said, finding her in the hallway, grabbing her by the arm.
"I'm so happy for Devin, for what's going to happen tomorrow. Her life will change forever. All of yours will. I always wanted to do it like you did."
Molly was nearly crying, holding Katie's hands, swinging them.
"How did I do it?" Katie said. "What did I do? What did I do?"
Around 10, Katie found Eric in the kitchen, talking on the phone, asking Drew about something he was watching on television, a show about a woman who died of yellow fever and whose body had turned into soap. As he talked,
"She was wearing knee socks? For real, buddy?"
His face relaxed for the first time in months. It reminded her of some things and erased other things. Watching him, she knew she would let him back in their bed later that night. She knew she would press against his back, burying her face in his thick hair, listening to his heartbeat. What would he be thinking, though, when he slipped under the covers? Would he be thinking of what his daughter had done? What he'd done to conceal it? Or might he be thinking of how she'd trapped him 17 years ago, turned his youthful fling with a concessions girl into marriage, family, mortgage, second mortgage, days sardined with school, practice drop-off, dry cleaner, grocery store, practice pickup, homework, overturned fishbowl, torn cereal boxes, oozing flakes and O's on top of the refrigerator, booster emails, dinner, laundry, collapse. Maybe he'd be thinking he found a way to happiness, even if he hadn't expected it. The life they'd created, or built, from their wayward romance or from the bloody back lawn where Devin was, in some ways, born, was far greater than the both of them. It was a beautiful, an extraordinary thing. But deep down, Katie knew Eric wouldn't be thinking any of this. Instead, he'd be thinking, "Please, for Devin, tomorrow and the next day, let her hit all the spots. Let her keep that right leg high. Let her stun with her double twist Yurchenko. Let her show them everything that she can do, everything that she is. Let her make it." So Katie left the kitchen and took the past joint
and drank long tugs from the beers that became margaritas later, at Casa Pepe's down the road, a marimba trio playing raucously, a song called I Already Have a Husband, and Molly jumping up, starting to dance. The musicians applauded, one of them handing her his mallet, and Molly grabbed it. Laughing, she started twirling it over her head, just as she had at the tiki party. And they could all see it, or Katie could, watching all that joy. As everyone cheered, Molly twirled like she'd twirled that silver-sprayed pipe stolen from her father's tool bench 25 years ago or more. It had looked like a pinwheel in the sun.
Remember that kind of wanting?
She'd said that night of the tiki party.
That kind that's just for yourself, and you don't even have to feel guilty about it. You wouldn't know to.
And now, it was all happening. Up there on the creaking risers at qualifiers. Amid the Roman judges, black blazers and appraising eyes, and the metallic leotards, hologram swirls, mesh, spandex foil, the girls like jewel bugs hopping, flipping. Beside her, Drew, the fever long gone, skin peeled away, revealing a face that was not the same face, was new. Curling him close, she looked into his eyes, and they weren't the same eyes. Suddenly, with great pain, she knew she couldn't see into them as she once could. She had no idea what he was thinking at all, eyes blank, blinds drawn.
Mom, Devin's going to do it, he promised, patting her hand. She's going to make it. I told her this morning. And she said she loved me.
We all love you, Drew, she said, pulling him closer. They had never talked about the role he'd played in any of this, and never again about what he'd seen in the garage. His father and his sister. Their world flayed before them, both their hands covered in blood and gristle. His father and sister conspiring to form a lie to last forever. Fortress walls 30 feet thick, a surrounding moat 100 yards deep. Or maybe Eric had talked to him, taking him of late on long meandering walks through the woods to look for sphinx moths as dusk fell. The Knoxes. They were four, but they were one. Seated in the risers, backs arched in their matching Bellstars tees, Katie, Eric, and Drew watched Devin. The matchless perfection with which she stormed through the compulsories on day one. The night in between, at the Best Western that smelled like carpet powder and pet hair, they shared both a watchful silence and the excitement of knowing that she would secure it on day two. And now here it was. The end of a triumphant day two, her last routine, her last vault run. They had embarked on this epic journey long ago, centuries it felt like, and it was unstoppable. The force that through the green fuse drives the flower. No one could stop it now. Not the police. Not Haley Belfour, who'd followed her beloved uncle in lockstep. Not Gwen Weaver. Not a scattering of paint chips that never led anywhere. Another unsolved hit and run. Not the envy of the others. Not all the people who'd misunderstood and judged them. Not even the lobster claw at the end of Devin's ankle could stop them now. Least of all a boy, a beautiful, ephemeral young man who'd floated up from the road like a feather. No one could. Was one meant to pay forever for a fleeting mistake? A turn of the wheel? A bobble of a foot? A pause that lasted seconds too long? Because they had finally arrived at what it had all been leading to. Since Devin first squirmed, a slippery minnow in her womb, promising Katie everything, beginning with Eric. All forces had conspired for them at last, and it was time for the Knoxes, their hearts on the floor. Katie watched, her breath even and sure, one hand in Eric's, the other tight on Drew's shoulder. At the foot of the runway, Devin waited, her eyes on the gleaming leather of the vault table. And from the stands, it was like her foot was glowing. It was glowing. There she stood, Devin, her body, their body, one body, and all the exceptional talent contained within it. Her body a machine, a marvel. Her body was everything.
Her body was their heart.
This has been a Hachette audio production of You Will Know Me, written by Megan Abbott, read by Lauren Fortgang, produced by Christine M. Farrell, recorded by Audio Media Production, post-production by James Bennett. You Will Know Me is also available in print and digital formats from Little Brown & Company, a division of Hachette Book Group. For more Hachette audio productions, visit us at hachetteaudio.com. Thank you for listening. Text copyright 2016 by Megan Abbott. Audio production copyright 2016 by Hachette Audio. All rights reserved. Hachette Book Group supports the right to free expression and the value of copyright. The purpose of copyright is to encourage writers and artists to produce the creative works that enrich our culture. The duplicating, uploading, and distribution of this audiobook without permission is a theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like permission to use material from the audiobook, other than for review purposes, please contact permissions at hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or used fictitiously, and any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, events or locales is entirely coincidental.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.